Ohio is where we're recording tonight, and it's July 14th, 2012, 10 days after the infamous firework fail in Lakewood. I haven't had a chance to discuss this on the podcast yet, so this is the time I'm going to bring it up, even though it's over a week later. Lakewood, Ohio, where I live, had a... It had a total failure of their fireworks show. I guess they lit off maybe one or two little fireworks, but they couldn't get the main system of fireworks lit. They had some problem with the detonator, something stupid like that. And the all those people crammed into Lakewood Park to see it didn't really see much. Now, on the other hand, Jessica and I were actually just hanging out at a friend's party in the west side of Cleveland, where people have fireworks that they light off in the front yard, and it's a pretty good show, and people kind of compete block to block, and it's pretty laid back, and people are just lighting off fireworks and drinking some beers in the front yard. Nice atmosphere, not nearly as crowded, a lot calmer and friendlier, and we actually saw fireworks.
We did.
So even though we live in Lakewood, we decided to go and visit friends out the west side of Cleveland, down below 90, not that far from where we live, but a little ways over, and it's a lot more relaxed, because people let off firecrackers in Lakewood, but it's all passive-aggressive, it's loud, and there's no show, because Lakewood is a lot stricter about that kind of stuff, I guess, than the west side of Cleveland.
Yeah, and it was a nice show. You know, there's a couple other neighbors around the neighborhood, so there was maybe between our friends and the other two, three or four good shows
yeah.
that we could see. And
West 120 is near Lorraine. We'll be that specific. It was like that neighborhood out there.
Yeah, and you know, there was kids out and everybody's having a good time. It was a nice warm evening. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I have a second edition out of my book. I mentioned the book before on the podcast, but I have a second edition of the ebook out, and it's available for free to download. You go to djmcloud.com and find, you know, Like Any Gangster, Selected Writings 2006 to 2011. Compiling this book created a question of scale. Technology in the last decade has allowed intensive amounts of dry and indirect kinds of personal communication. The question for many people is how to modulate the levels of data being received. Photos and movies from friends, family, coworkers, colleagues, people create a lot of visual data. Text also write, maybe not as much as in the golden age of email. A decade ago, maybe SMS and other trends have shortened the average message, but then the average email length has probably gotten shorter also. I wrote a handful of blog posts over the years, and I don't know if I should send out links to them or promote them on Facebook or just do what I usually do, putting links in my Twitter feed to the blog, other than just encapsulating some highlights of things I've written. I also got to do some curation work on this stack of web content that I've created over the last several years. I wanted to put together a nice collection, and I think that the evolution of the writing in a chronological way is put secondary to attempts to make the work a kind of coherent book that could be read on its own. It is filled with links and references, but I think that the selection of text and, of course, photos that I pick could work as a narrative way, could work as a narrative that may not be entirely linear, but does maybe have a certain arc to it that the reader can follow. Well, now that was taken from the afterword to the book, the afterword to the second edition. So, I'm not going to read the whole afterword, but I'm going to read another part of it here. Because, there's more to it. That first part is really more of just another note about the book. So here's another part of the afterword. Occasionally, for sport, I'll check the website of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and they always seem to have a widget in the sidebar of, like, every page about the commenter of the month or whatever. Whatever peculiar cross-reference on the scales of violent to self-mutilating and lonely to forgotten makes up the particular madness of the individual commenter typically dissolves into predictable sloganeering somewhat disappointingly. How is it that the most mentally unstable among us, perfectly encapsulated by the newspaper website commentary, seem to converge into a few predictable views, not even at the level of arguments, but instead at the level of wrongly assumed truisms, providing the scaffolding for the wrong-headed assumptions that in more capable minds would provide the raw material for disingenuous arguments. Well, I think the next topic that I had was about the busyness article. I don't know if that is just such troll bait that it's not even worth getting into, but the article about the it was in the New York Times as an opinion piece about people's perception or view, maybe even self-deluding about how busy they are and their need to talk about that, or perhaps overschedule themselves with trivial things to try to create a perception among others, perhaps, but maybe even more for themselves, that they're not idle or they're not useless or, I don't know, they're using their time, or that they're trying as hard as they can. There's all sorts of, like, possible reasons why people might do what they're doing, right? But I guess I wrote in my Evernote here, if you're telling everyone you're so, quote, busy, unquote, all the time, the perceptive among us have long known that you're really just acting self-important and perhaps trying too hard to reassure yourself about your own significance. Now, I don't know. Like, that's one way to look at it anyway. But what do you think? So if you have some ideas about what your feelings are about that article, you can check the show notes and see what the article is about at djmcloud.com. Look for podcast 38 or search for it or something. And then also, if you have an opinion and you want to voice it, if you found that question, interesting or something you want to respond to, then send an email in to djmcloud@sf3am.com. And, we'll have a better idea of what some of the listeners are thinking. If you wanna send us some feedback, Now I've got a video discussion coming up, but it's not going to be the YouTube versus Vimeo debate that I've covered once, twice, or I don't know how many times before. This is something different. Well, I have been using Vidi, which is this new app that people are trying out. It allows users to share 15-second videos. It works on the iPhone, but you can share the links to the videos on Facebook or Twitter. And I think they have a link to YouTube and Tumblr also. I haven't tried those, but I think this is a video site where the videos are limited to 15 seconds. I've seen some really cool creative stuff on there though. There's gonna be cool animal videos like that parrot video we saw, and then there's gonna be people that do clever stuff like that diptych style video where the creator put three different videos going in different frames in the video, and they took it from like the top of like a high up in a skyscraper in Chicago apparently. Like, so there, I mean, there's these cool videos out there, but you know, I've already put three videos up and I think they're pretty good. One of them has the parakeets flying, and then one has me talking about how I'm gonna shave. I'm gonna get rid of the beard I've been growing out for a few weeks. But then another one, a really cool one we made today was cranes flying. We were walking along the Rocky River and we saw some cranes on the river. I got a little bit of video of cranes flying down the river, and then I also got video of Jessica talking about it, and that's a pretty cool video.
It's really beautiful, and it just shares a moment, you know, and I think, you know, photos can do that, and Vidi lets you do that with video. I mean, I like the shortened format. You know, I think a lot of times stuff on YouTube, they're like, oh God, how long is this going to go on? Where's the good part? When are they actually going to talk about what they said they're going to talk about in their title and their tags?
Well, yeah, it's one of those sites that has some competitors, like I guess Social Cam and at least one other out there that are doing similar things, number of sites, but Vidi's the one I'm trying, and I guess it's kind of cool. If you want to see the site where we're putting videos up, it's www.vidy.com/Pacific Pelican. So you know, that's just my little page on that site that has that nice one with you in it today. So that's your first appearance, but hopefully there'll be a lot more. I guess I like the shortness of the video as kind of a I think it's more than a gimmick. You know, it's like a certain kind of limitation that, you know, like the last what I've done is the last couple videos I've cut apart videos with iMovie for iPhone, and I think that's kind of a cool use for that, because that I've used iMovie for iPhone to make videos that are like a minute or so, but I don't know if it, you know, especially when you have a good desktop and Final Cut Pro 10 like we do, you know, you might want to use desktop for a lot of stuff, but 15 second videos, that's really like, there's a certain kind of like shortness to that that makes it very, very good, very amenable to being edited on the iPhone. What do you think of those kinds of sites? Like, what do you think there's like growth there that's going to be on the level of photo sharing sites like Instagram, or do you think this is more of a niche?
I think video is going to become more important. I think the 15-second thing is going to be interesting to see how people use it. I think it's probably still in its infancy right now. But I think once we start to see people do really different and interesting things with this format, then we'll kind of know where this platform is going to go.
Cool. All right. Well, this is the fast round where I'm gonna pitch you stories, and you're gonna say if you pass or if it gets a short segment. Paper app for iPad.
Yes, it gets a short segment.
That's an app that you've been doing very cool drawings with, and you've got the expanded tool set now on it, like the in-app purchases, and you've really been doing cool stuff, like watercolor and stuff.
Yes, I like it. I got the extra pack. My only critique is, well, not my only, but more colors would be nice.
It has a certain palette, huh?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
yeah, and it's a certain
colors.
Type of palette. It's a kind of matte palette, or like flat, like warm palette. I don't know how to put it, but you know, like the types of colors, they're not straight primary.
No, but I mean, like the pencil really looks like a pencil. It's got the grainy texture of you dragging a pencil. The watercolor is really cool, and you can layer the colors. The marker is neat. The pen literally looks like a pen. I don't know how they did it, but I mean, it's just so cool. It's got like the techniques. And it's fun. It's nice. You know, there's a couple other apps out there that I like, but if you're looking for a new drawing app, this is definitely worth it.
Well, TweetDeck for Chrome. Is something I've been using. Pass or go on?
Go on.
Oh, okay. Well, TweetDeck for Chrome. Make sure you use the Chrome app, not the website, and not the desktop app. Well, you've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown, and with Jessica. And today is July 14th, 2012. This is episode 38. And it looks like we have two stories left, and we can go to a special overtime segment.
Yay! Overtime! Overtime! This is a special baseball summer edition. Extra innings,
because I mean, hey, it's not a bad baseball summer. Like if the Mets are playing some okay ball, they have a really good knuckleballer, RA. They have people. They have Johan Santana pitching really well. There's David Wright might be an MVP. I mean, it's a good season for the Mets, and that's. You know, that's the main way I look at things. And locally here in Cleveland, the Tribe is doing okay. I think they actually still have a winning record. They're gonna maybe fight for a playoff spot. So we'll see about that. Baseball definitely. Like we've been to the park once. We'll see how many more games we get to. Well, I've got another story to pitch to you. Google Chrome browser for iOS.
Yes.
Okay. You know, I think this is a good browser. Safari is the default browser in iOS, and I don't think there's any way to change that outside jailbreaking. So let's say you're in an app like Reader or Tweetbot or something, and you select, you know, go to the web or go to Safari. As one of the options in terms of, like, let's say you're viewing a page or something in their web view and you want to just look at it in regular Safari or, say, in a regular browser. The default is going to be Safari as that browser. Right? And it's like, well, on the other hand, though, the browser on my homepage is now Chrome instead of Safari.
That's pretty cool.
I prefer it. But I like Chrome on desktop better than Safari on desktop. Although I use both.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to have both, and I would probably use both here, but I was very happy about how they have background audio. You know, this is an edge case, maybe kind of a geek thing, but Google Music is a pretty cool service, but I don't know, like, it, you know, people, I meet Android users and that like don't seem to use it. It seems like that would just be a default with Android users, but whatever. I mean, you know, people don't really, it hasn't really had the uptake. I mean, that maybe, I'm sure that Google like wanted, but what you can do, right, is you can get a client app, like GMusic for like, you know, for iOS, but it's more native, I think, in Android. But with Google Music, if you go into Chrome and you're logged into Google, and it seems like, I think you kind of like log in like sort of at the browser level to Google.
Okay.
And you know, you can't do that in iOS, right? You can do that in Android, right? And there are a lot of Google accounts that a lot of geeks use, like for their Google Reader account and stuff, like you're for Google Plus, you know, like app, like you're going to want, for YouTube, you want to like be logged into your Google account. And there isn't like an easy system level way to do it like there is with Twitter now in iOS, and I think there will be in iOS 6 for Facebook too. And it's easier to stay logged in Chrome because it's native. Now you can go to Google Music, music.google.com. If you have music you've uploaded or bought, you can play it, and then you leave the browser, it'll keep playing. I've tried that with other alternative browsers like Dolphin, and it will not background play. So Google definitely did some cool tricks in making this. I'm not saying that they you know, it's still not going to have access to the, you know, whatever, base level, to the system level APIs or whatever that Apple allows with Safari. Safari is still the bolted in, you know, default browser in iOS. But Google Chrome is a really cool alternative, and it does things like background audio, which is either something they thought through in making Chrome, or I don't know why, but why, you know, it works in ways that it didn't in like Dolphin browser, which was my former favorite alternative browser.
Dolphin, I think it has a cool name too.
Dolphin is actually more like desktop Chrome than Google Chrome is too. They redesigned Chrome, and I don't know if it's like brilliant, but I kind of like the way tabs like pop up and down and stuff. It's not a bad design. I don't know, but actually, Dolphin browser for iOS and I think for Android too. I don't know. I think it's actually kind of popular on Android. It's a lot like desktop Chrome, the way the tabs look and stuff like that, you know. Whereas, you know, the iOS Chrome has a very different look and feel. I mean, what is your feeling been about it?
I haven't used it that much, but I think I'd like to try a new browser because I'm always looking for something new and different on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you certainly use your iPhone a decent amount. I think there's one more story that I had. Did you hear about how Dig got sold to BetaWorks? BetaWorks being the company that I think is behind Bitly and some other stuff, you know, tech kind of company. Did you hear Dig was sold, like their assets basically were sold for $500,000 to BetaWorks?
Not.
Well, you know, that's like that's the end game for Dig. Like a handful of their employees went to work for the Washington Post, like I don't know, in the last year or so. But this was an asset buyout where the BetaWorks people are taking Dig and its assets and its trademarks or whatever, but they're not taking any current employees. So they're going to take the site, but not a single current employee. And you've been part of like website buyouts, and sometimes they take on a handful of employees for the transition, or you know, for whatever reason, to get their talents, and for whatever reason. But in this case, you know, they're not taking any Dig people over to BetaWorks, but they're keeping. Apparently, they're going to try to keep the site going. So it's kind of an endgame, vaguely similar to Delicious, where another really hot Web 2.0 startup, kind of like. Stumbled into being bought out by, you know, bought out for not too much, but Delicious was bought from Yahoo, whereas Dig was sort of bought from the people that owned it. There were rumors at one time that Google was looking to perhaps pay hundreds of millions of dollars to buy out Dig. And you remember all the hype about how many millions of dollars it was worth. We were in San Francisco in 2006, 2007, when all that was going on.
Yeah, people should just sell at the right time.
I guess they didn't sell at the right time. They made $500,000, and you know, we have up that podcast. Remember the Dig HD DVD debacle?
Yes.
That was the beginning of the end. That was like 2007.
It had gone downhill, and I hadn't even heard about it until you recently mentioned that.
Yeah, well, so if you want to hear us talking about Dig back in 2007, there's a link in at the show notes to podcast number 7. So you can that's a podcast on the pacificpelican.us/podcast site, and you can see the you know, you can see us talking on video about it. And it was pretty low tech, I think. You know, like we certainly didn't have the kind of cameras or equipment back then, computers back then. You know, some of those little podcasts are pretty cool, I think. Yeah, I also did take a clip of Dig founder or co-founder Kevin Rose on one of those tech podcasts, he talked about Dutch Telecom, so I clipped that. So there's a link to that in the show notes too, because that's actually podcast number 7. So actually, because I was wrong, podcast number 7 of DJMCloud.com, you know, audio podcast number 7 is when I clipped Dutch Telecom. Podcast 3 is the pacificpelican.us/podcast that we talked about today again.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, everybody makes errors, and then, you know, sometimes I listen to podcasts just for audio quality reasons, and then I hear errors, and, you know, maybe try to correct them later. But, you know, I mean, you make errors that are like, or you're vague enough that it's not really untrue, but it's not really very useful. I don't know, you know, like audio problems too. Like you record the audio wrong, and there's not much you can do. Like I tried a few podcasts ago. I had Jim on, right, and there were like, I don't know why, but the recording just didn't. Oh, you know what I was doing? I tried recording in Audacity. I was using like Logic for, you know, instruments, but I was using Audacity to record. And I think you could turn the levels up in Audacity, but I use the automatic level control in GarageBand, and it works pretty well. You know. So I try to do what I can about the audio quality. For example, I try to push the audio quality, the audio volume up a lot on podcast 36, but it was amazing how I couldn't do it. I ran it through Logic. I put in Logic and tried to output it with higher decibels on all the key tracks and all this stuff, and it just didn't really go anywhere. Well, you're going to see a cool drawing in the show notes and the podcast artwork that we've seen Jessica make on her paper app. I have that one from before, I think, that I used, but she's made a lot of cool ones. She just sketched another really cool one. So, yeah, that app is good if you're good at drawing, you know. So I don't know how useful that app is to me. Jessica saw the atrocity that I made when I tried to draw before. But I'm certainly trying.
It was great.
Oh.